Hey guys, it's Matt here, the founder at Sweat Elite, and welcome back to another episode of In My Opinion. This might be the first In My Opinion episode you're listening to, or it might be the second, third, or fourth one. I did quite a few of them towards the end of last year when I was in Japan filming some content around the Ekiden event. But today I have my fiancée Reem joining me for the first maybe 10 or 15 minutes or so. We'll check in with her. I'll also speak a lot about ketones, which is a massive trend at the moment in the endurance space. I'll talk a little bit about shoes and shoe reviews and why I think they're a bit useless, to be honest. I'll talk about cultural differences in media. We'll go through some training sessions and let's just see where we get to. But Reem, thanks for joining me. You've been on the podcast before, but not only with me. So this is the first time it's just been you and me on the pod. How are you doing?
I know, fangirling right now.
And I guess the first thing I'd like to ask you about, you're on day 29 of Ramadan.
Yes.
How's it been?
I think you guys can tell from my tone, I probably am going to feel I'm fatigued. You'll tell it. I'm not as cheerful and chippy, but I'm definitely hanging in there. Wednesday is the big holiday, so just one more day of fasting after this.
So you trained last year for the London Marathon, of which you ran a personal best.
Yes.
In fact, you can share the story.
Yeah. So last year, the last crucial month of training, all the 20 milers and plus, were all during the month of Ramadan. So I would wake up at 4:35, I believe. We were in Monte Gordo, so the time before Suhoor, which is the breakfast, which is before your first prayer of Fajr, was around 4:35. And then I would just wake up, try to stuff myself with as much as I can, carb-wise. And then Ronnie and Matt would join me for some long runs, and all my 20, 22, 24 miles were during the month of Ramadan.
I know. You were so inspired by Sifan Hassan too, who did
yes.
Ramadan and then came out and won the women's event. But I'm glad you just brought up Ronnie, actually, because interestingly enough, that was last year.
Yeah.
And Ronnie is now the CEO at Sweat
Elite. He sure is.
So at the time, we met Ronnie a few months before that in Kenya. He came to the Kenya camp and obviously was very familiar with Sweat Elite. But yeah, some people might know we have a new CEO at Sweat Elite, and Reem just referenced him because he was at Monte Gordo with us this time last year doing some training in Portugal.
So, yeah, I remember yeah. Coach Clara was, it was my 24 miles, and I think the first 6 miles were easy, and then it was 8 miles progressive. And Matt and Ronnie just kind of paced me and blocked the wind for me, so it was perfect.
Yeah. So Reem, I'm glad that you can join me today. I guess one of the things I wanted to share and talk a little bit more to is you see this really interesting side where people are always messaging, well, people aren't always messaging me, but from time to time, I'll have people reach out and say, I have the dream job and I have this perfect scenario. And then you see me behind the scenes always so stressed, so frustrated about travel. Go on. I want you to just put it out there and see from your point of view how this works.
So I think it's because everyone has that, like, what, 9-to-5 job, 9-to-10 job, and they're like, yeah, you know, it pays the bills, it's great, but it sucks going in to work all the time and having that, you know, the demand. The dream job, it is a dream job. I mean, at the end of the day, you don't have someone telling you what to do. You're doing everything, waking up, getting things done. But I also think it's because, like, you are extremely driven and you see a vision that maybe a lot of people have a hard time being this passionate and moving it forward. But with that being said, I don't think everyone realized the stress that comes with everything. So, you know, you're not getting paid bi-weekly if you're not going out there and reaching out to products and brands and really building a name for yourself. There's nothing coming in, and that is not the easiest thing to do in the world. And then, you know, you have to arrange your schedule and arrange your training compared around work. So, I mean, I look at you and you're doing a 220 marathoner, and I don't think many people can do that pretty easily, but you're training just as hard as everyone else, but you're also working just as hard as everyone else. So you're putting the athletes first, you're showing up at 6:30 for someone's training, recording, then it's midday heat and you're not well in the heat and you're just out there getting it done. No excuses, just pumping through. And I think that's another component that maybe a lot of people don't see. But then a lot of people don't see these simple things in life, like having the same consistent bed, waking up, your phone charger's there, all these small little things, having a car, having it parked in the same spot. And I just remember once when you were at doing this big 8-week content when we were in Europe when we first met, and you called me in a panic. I just lost my phone, or I just lost the car keys. Goodness. The car keys is parked. It's
not,
a holiday.
Please, do not bring it. This is traumatic.
Yeah, it was extreme. And I just remember thinking, it's okay. Just follow your steps. Walk it back. He's like, I did that. I can't find it. Great. Reach out to the car service. And he's like, Reem, it's a holiday. Everything's closed for 4 days and my flight's in like 3 hours. And I was like, oh, I didn't even consider that.
So this is the very end of 2021. And I was up in Scotland doing some videos with Andy Butchard, a few others. And in the same few days, I lost my phone. I got it back after 2 days. I figured out where it was. Long story for another time. Mm-hmm. And then I went for a run one day and lost my car key when I was running around Edinburgh. And my phone, no, my wallet was in the car and I had my phone with me. But I lost the car keys on the run.
Yeah.
And it was raining. And it was the 31st of December, 2021. Mm-hmm. The car agency, the car company was closed. I couldn't get a hold of them. And what made it even worse was I was parked in the middle of the city.
Yeah.
So I was just getting fined every couple of hours. I think I accumulated
they're like, move your
like
car.
Fines. Yeah. It was a nightmare.
I remember you telling me, like, I'm trying to move my car, sir. And he's like, I understand, but it needs to be moved. Here's a ticket.
I'm like, I can't. I need a tow truck to move it.
So, and also, like, when you're, like, you know, joining you for a year of travel, I don't think people realize that every country is so different. Rules are so different. Car rentals are so different. Like, we went into Italy, and we tried to rent a car, and they were like, no, you have to have an international driver's license. And I just looked at each other, and we're like, right, okay, so how much more do we have to pay? So there is a lot of moving pieces, and without having that consistency, that can really take a toll on someone, and so a lot to discover.
Yeah, well, I mean, just thinking back to that week, so that was because I met you at Chicago Marathon in 2021, so we would have been speaking at that point for about 2.5-3 months. That was probably one of the most difficult weeks I've had on the road, but there's also been a lot of other challenging times. I mean, at the end of the day, they probably mostly just come around to like exorbitant fees that we didn't expect, like the one time that I'm going to have a little bit of a jab at you here, but to be fair, I probably would have made the same mistake if I was you when you booked the electric car in Spain.
Okay, guys, here's the thing. In the US, electric car means it's a hybrid, right? So it's not, I looked at it up and I was like, oh, it's a hybrid. So I can put gas or it's like a Prius, right? So I'm like, perfect. I'm going to book the car. And as soon as we get there, they're like, okay, is there, like, you have to charge it? And I was like, charge it?
So for context, we were driving to Font-Romeu out in the middle of the French Pyrenees, and there was basically no electronic charging stations out there. And Reem booked a car. And I'm not like...
I earned it. I earned a piss.
Yeah. And so what happened was I realized we couldn't take the electric car because we couldn't charge it out there. And so we had to book another car, and they basically had no cars left, and we had to pay for a premium car. And it was like another $1,200.
Jeez, it was bad.
Like, this stuff happens all the time.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I think hearing that from you, it's... It's funny, but at the same time, it does.
It's bad. I mean, I remember thinking there when they were like, "Oh, we have no cars left," and I'm like, "Oh, I did know, God." I was just like, "Okay, lady, listen to me. We need to figure this out before Matt comes. How do we sort this?"
Yep, there's been probably 8 to 10 situations similar to that.
Mm-hmm.
The one in Italy you referenced when we went to pick up the car and they said you need an international driver's license. I was like, what is that? And they said, and I thought they were trying to scam us because they said, well, if you don't have one, you have to pay €62 a day for insurance.
Yeah.
Which I think it was a 12-day trip.
It was
which
massive.
Which is obviously almost $1,000. But anyway, I didn't mean for this intro just to be about how difficult financially this can be. But what are you going to be training for this year? Are you going to be doing Chicago Marathon with me?
Yeah. So I'm keeping my options slightly open. I want to do something pretty magical this year. I mean, I've qualified for Boston and reached my ultimate goal in life right now. And then I got shattered.
Go on, tell that story quickly.
So,
because that's the reason I'm doing Boston Marathon in 7 days. And you tell the story as to how that came about. Because I wouldn't have been in the Boston Marathon field if it wasn't for you.
Yeah, that is true. But I always had this vision of qualifying for Boston and making it big, right? I mean, I think every American does. And when I first started running, I thought that was pretty daunting, like a 3:30. I think it was 3:35 at the time. And I was like, there's no way. But I, like the backstory is, I ran my first marathon in Chicago in 2017, just graduated college. And I was like, I'm going to do it. And I did bear training. I found something online and I was just doing it. And I would get bored on my long runs. I would literally stop running. And my one friend at the time, Balad, would be like, are you okay? And I'm like, yeah, I'm great. I just got really bored. And he's like, oh, that's why you were stopping? And I was like, yeah. And I did no speed session and I ran a 4:29. And so ever since then, I mean, my goal was always Boston. So got serious, got a coach. And I came pretty close at Indy Marathon, where we ran in 2021,
2021,
right?
Yeah. A month after we met.
And I was like, oh my God, I missed it. I can't believe I'm this close. And I wasn't even aiming for it. So then I got really serious, totally hit the gym, hardcore, qualified after, not to mention my Ramadan was right in the middle of that. So I was so happy and proud. I couldn't stop crying when I finished the line in London. And then these past 2 years prior to that was exactly on the dot, the qualification. They moved it to 3:30. And then it was 3:30. Everyone that qualified made it qualification time. The year after that, I think maybe it was like 2 minutes. I was like, for sure, I have this in like 4 minutes. I'm like, I'm good to go. And then I got the email. It was like 5 minutes and 20 seconds or something faster. And I was like, just finished an overnight shift. And I was like, no, this isn't true. I'm going to bed. I don't believe in this. Woke up, reality sunk in.
I was so devastated because I was so looking forward to doing Boston with you because, you know, I already knew before I moved to America that Boston was such a big deal to Americans. But those that are listening from the UK or Australia or anyone outside the US, Boston is the grand final of marathons for most American marathons,
yeah,
I would say.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, New York and Chicago are huge, but I feel like Boston is the big one for American runners. I don't know. I get that vibe. Do you think
it's
that's
so
right?
Massive?
Yeah,
I definitely agree. It's very massive to the point where I was like, I will not go to Boston until I qualify. And now I have to go to Boston, and it's gonna be really hard to just not get up and do a shakeout run and hit the line.
It's going to be so inspiring for you though to be able to watch. I mean, come to the shakeout run and
sure.
We're not exactly sure how you're going to watch because it's a point-to-point
race.
Yeah,
if anyone has any ideas, definitely let us know.
Yeah. So for those interested, I'm running Boston. A whole lot of people in the Sweat Elite Coaching Academy are running Boston. Mm-hmm. I'm not running it all out. I haven't trained for a marathon. I'm just running it with a few friends, probably around the 2:30 to 2:40 mark. I might not even run that fast. Who knows? I'm just having a bit of fun with it. But Reem, I really hope that we can do it together properly next year, mm-hmm. where we both go all out. But what do you think?
I don't think I can do it next year, though. The time is, what's really interesting about Boston is you have to qualify before the fall races.
Oh, yeah.
So if I run Chicago, it's 2 years from now.
That's right.
Which is challenging.
Because the cutoff period ends just before Chicago, mm-hmm. right? Okay. We haven't really.
So I have to be a little tricky with deciding which races if I'm going to go for it right before and figure it out.
Yeah. Damn. Well, I'm really hoping to do Boston with you at some point soon because I want to run it all out at some point. I don't think it's a course that is very fast for someone like me. I've never been very good on the hills, but I feel like you'd run pretty well there. But I guess a question I wanted to ask is, I put out on a podcast apparently in 2018 that I'd never break 2:30 in a marathon. That's kind of cool to think back to that. What do you think your capabilities are? Because I want to replay this to you in a few years.
I have this goal for myself. It was always to go sub 3. But my ultimate goal, I have a few goals. So sub 3, but it's more around sub 2:50. And I have this crazy goal, and you guys can laugh at me all you want. But my goal is to go sub 2:40. And it's because I'm Palestinian and I would love to represent my country in the Olympic Games, which, you know, I've heard a few friends of mine explain the situation. You know, you have to be the top from your country. And unfortunately, not many people, female-wise, is able to do that. So if it goes off points and I'm the only one earning points, I can get there. So I even looked into it. I think the fastest female was like 239. And so I was like, oh, simple. But just tell me the restrictions and I don't have to be the fastest. I can just go. So that's really my ultimate goal. And I just want to get as close to that as possible. Sub 250 would be great, because then I can slowly maybe represent in some ways. But that's my goals in life, guys.
It's hard to know where your limits lie, because you've run 326, but you haven't done a lot of marathons. Mm-mm. Well, you have done a few, but you haven't found your, like, when you've been training, it's been good training, but you haven't really done what I would determine to be a sub 3 hour marathon training block. You've done training that has guided you towards running 3:26.
No, that's very true.
3 or 4 days a week sort of thing. And, you know, not a whole lot of volume. Not that I think volume's the key for you, but I think I fundamentally believe, and I've told you this, I think you can definitely run under 3 hours without a doubt. It's hard for me to know how much further you can go from there.
Correct. But I haven't actually, like you said, done a block where I'm going full out, I'm hitting the gym, I'm doing all my strength work, because I know I have weak glutes. So if I prioritize that right before a build, it's really crucial for me. But I haven't given it my all, and I know that I need to in order to get closer and closer to my goals. Mm-hmm. And so I just need that consistency of doing that, and I hope to start doing that moving forward.
Awesome. Before I jump into the other room, because I know you have to get back to work, actually, I've got two quick things to ask you about. We'll be quick about them, though. Mm-hmm. First one, you mentioned that you haven't done a lot of gym. Now, this is something that's interesting. Can you explain how hard it is to people to actually get into the routine of doing stuff like a gym when you're traveling?
So I'll break down my schedule quickly. I am the Sweat Elite Coaching Academy's manager, so I'm just assisting getting things done. I'll keep it simple to that. And I'm also a crisis counselor, so I am...
That was the second thing I wanted you to share.
So I am a therapist here in Chicago, and I work for a company in New York. And so I just started a full-time job working remotely to be able to prioritize my training and prioritize Sweat Elite Coaching Academy. And then add in the travel with that and add in the sleep. So I start my day, I'm going to start pretty early. Usually around 5:30 is my goal. It's been a little bit tricky with Ramadan, and then get training done, get Sweat Elite stuff done, then jump into work at 2 to 11 and then go to bed. So it's like, where do you fit in self-care? Where do you fit in gym? You know, travel to everything, take away like being consistent. Like, there's a lot of elements that come to all this. So,
I've complained already enough on podcasts and videos about how hard it is to go to the gym when you're traveling, so I won't go into it too much. But I think it was interesting to see last year how when you were about to go to Japan, you sort of had a plan to go to the gym. But when you started to like join me on the trips to film in Ekiden, and then you like, we realized that you couldn't easily sign up to a gym just for like a month. Like, there's lots of little things that just sort of stand in the way. Not to mention that people completely underestimate how strong their current habits are. Mm-hmm. Like, you're not even aware of your own routine and habits sometimes. And then when you get thrown into a different environment, especially one that doesn't have much English spoken or much signage in English, it's pretty hard to like create a rhythm and a routine. It's actually really hard. And it's something that has contributed a lot to... I would say over the last few years, I've had relatively poor to average mental health. And I think that's as a result of having such an inconsistent environment. In fact, I would put it almost all down to that. Mm-hmm. And speaking to the point that you said earlier about like seeing me stressed out all the time, I'm super excited about this year in living in Chicago and having a home. Even though I'll still be traveling a lot, at least I can come back to a home and have a home. And I think I can already feel the magic in that. And people might be listening thinking, what's so special about that? I've had a home for my whole life. I tell people all the time, you don't actually realize until you do long-term travel how nice it is to have a home.
Well, I think it's also like, there's two parts to that. When someone's going on a trip, they're going for 2 weeks exhausting themselves and they're like, oh, I can't wait to just get back and go to bed. We've never had that, right? And you haven't had that for over 7 years. It's constant go, 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 living out of a suitcase, not knowing if the hotel you're about to go to even has a good running water, right? Or even good consistency for work and good consistency bed and pillows and yada, yada. But also another piece that I remember, I would be driving to work sometimes and I'm like, whoa, I don't even know how I got here. And it's that memory, like you just drive and you're thinking of all these other, yeah, you're just on autopilot. Mm. You're never on autopilot. When we got to Japan, break it down is no one speaks English. The travel is insane. They have amazing transportation wise, taking an Uber or train system's great, but it takes 2 hours to get from place to place sometimes. So then you contribute that's a 4 hour journey from out and back to home. Then trying to find a gym, then getting a gym membership. And we're constantly moving every 2 to sometimes every week. So then I would think to myself, like, what's the point of paying for something, going through that hardship? There's no time in the day. Mm. And then I was also working part-time as a counselor. So it's like, come on, tell me where I'm fitting in 2 jobs. Managing Matt's mental health. No, I'm kidding.
that's not wrong, though, to be fair. Like, that's not
But
wrong.
Then also you trying have, to train.
I wouldn't say you've acted as a counselor to me, but you've definitely helped me get through a few things that have been pretty stressful.
Yeah, I think working as a crisis counselor, I look at life pretty differently than the average person.
Yeah. Well, Reem, appreciate you coming on the In My Opinion pod. We'll hear more from you soon. Where can people follow you if they want to see you run sub-3? You're on Strava? You're on Instagram?
I am on Strava. I guess it's just my name, right?
Yeah.
And then Instagram is the same, Reem Ali. Yeah. I think my sister created it for me. She's like, you have such an amazing life. You need to be out there. And I was like, I'm good. And she's like, no, you have to. So I think it's like Reem Ali something, like 679 or something like that.
It'll be Reem something else then.
Yeah, it will be Reem Fox.
Yeah, this year.
Exciting. Foxy couple.
I'm going to let you get back to work. I'm going to go to the other room and do the rest of this, In My Opinion.
Okay, I'm in a different area now, so the sound might sound a little bit different. I'm in a recording studio that's at the bottom of my accommodation in my apartment building. We have some sort of calling pods, so it's soundproof, so it'll sound a bit different. But once again, thanks for tuning in. These In My Opinions are fun, I guess, for the most part, because it's just sort of me usually talking my mind about different topics, and of course you're welcome to listen or welcome to not. But I thought I would get back on these because the response to the ones I did last year were really positive and people really enjoyed them, and they're just a little bit different. And I think when it comes to running content, it's challenging to make interesting content. It's a very simple sport. You know, when you look at it at a core level, it's just really simple. It's a race between men and women. obviously sometimes both in the same field, sometimes it's just men, sometimes it's just women, and it's just about times and placings. So I think trying to add a little bit more spice to these to this content is what I'm trying to do. So, you know, I do normally pick topics, speak about them for a little while, and hopefully people can find some value in them if possible. But I did want to jump on today and share a little bit more about a few topics of interest. So the first one is ketones. So it's no secret that Sweat Elite has partnered with HVMN that have actually recently, as of today, changed officially their branding to Ketone IQ. They're our biggest brand partner now. We have quite a lot of other brand partners, but they are our biggest one. They support the majority of our content now, so I'm really excited to work more with them. But what was super interesting to me is I actually just got back from a long, not that long, it was 9 days content trip where I went to Boulder, Colorado Springs, and Provo. And I'll speak more to that a little bit later. But when I was there, I met up with a friend called Lyle. In fact, I'd never met him before, but I'd spoken to him on the phone a few times, and he actually reached out to me after my first In My Opinion episode. He reached out and said he really enjoyed the episode. He said he saw me at Indianapolis. And when I researched his name and actually got to know who he was, he won the race in 2:15. So Lyle's a chemical engineer, and we sat down in Boulder the other day. He's from Boulder, that's where he lives at the moment. And we spoke at length for about 2 hours, all about ketones, about THC, about psilocybin, about all these different compounds that are really interesting to him. And I won't go into all of them, but specifically speaking to ketones, I would love to try and get Lyle on the pod at some point soon, because he was telling me how much research he had done into the effects of exogenous ketones. So speaking to ketones, this is a supplement that you can take. There's a bunch of brands out there that are doing it. They're all pretty similar. I can't speak to the specific differences between them all. Lyle could, because he's obviously the chemical engineer, and he understands the specifics of the ingredients. He has mentioned that there are slight differences in them, but he has been testing them in a lot of different ways, and he has found that consuming ketones more or less immediately after hard exercise makes a profound difference to the recovery. How that works, we're going to learn in the very near future from more information from Lyle. I was going to message him before this pod and ask him, but I didn't get around to it, to be honest. I just got back from the content trip last night. But it's about the glucose response in the body. And it's really obvious that this is a big deal, because Stephen Skullion has spoken about this at length on his YouTube channel. Many of the best triathletes in the world are now leaning into ketones. Ketone IQ recently partnered with one of the biggest cycling teams in the world. They're obviously big into the ketones as well. You can look that up on the HVMN Ketone IQ Instagram. And yeah, I think there's so much more that's going to come from this space. I've tended to use them first thing in the morning when I wake up. I'll have it on an empty stomach, and it gives me a really good brain energy boost, which is different to caffeine and sugar. It's so hard to explain what it feels like. It just feels a lot more calming and focused. And the only way I can describe it, which is ridiculous, it's not a very good way of describing it, is I feel like I could look at a black dot on a white wall for as long as I needed to and not lose focus. Now, that might make sense to you, it might not, but if I had a lot of caffeine, a lot of sugar, I feel like I'd get really bored of that very quickly. So I don't know, that's a terrible way to describe it, but I think that you should give it a go. Whichever brand you feel is best. Very, very transparently speaking, we do have a discount code at HVMN with Ketone IQ, so you can utilize that. It's just Sweat Elite, and you can find the link in the description of this podcast. That will get you 30% off. But you can do your research as to which brand you want to try. But I do think that there's a lot more that's going to come from this space in terms of more science around how the recovery works, what this specific timing is. According to Lyle, it's basically as soon as you can after the training sessions. And Lyle also ran 2:14 at the trials, and I believe he was 66th at halfway and came 16th or 18th. Like, he closed really hard. And at Indianapolis, I'm saying this just to sort of give you some context as to how experienced this man is at running. In Indianapolis, he ran 69 for the first half and 66 for the second half. And I think he did his last 5K in like 15:00 something. So yeah, he's obviously studied the space a lot, knows a lot about training. He's listened to the pod a lot. It was great to catch up with him and learn more about this. But I do hope that moving forward, I can share a lot more about this research and understanding around ketones. But for now, I know for sure, based on everything that I've understood, listening to the guys at HVMN Ketone IQ and Lyle, that consuming it very quickly after training, basically as soon as possible, but I believe Lyle said within the first 10 minutes is optimal, is going to improve your recovery, your muscular recovery, pretty significantly. So yeah, it's really exciting. You know, these things are obviously completely legal. Activating ketones in the blood is something that happens when, if you're not familiar, when you fast after maybe, it depends on the person, it's normally 36 to 48 hours. So it's a natural response in the body. And yeah, it's super interesting. And I think anything that is coming out that helps human performance, that's natural, legal, and that anyone can access. Well, in this case, you could argue it's not cheap, so maybe not everyone can access, but it is, you know, it is coming down in cost as production's made a little bit easier, is just great for the sport. So yeah, super interesting stuff. Okay, moving on to another topic I said I would talk about on the Instagram story I put up, where I offered some ideas around what to talk about in this, in my opinion, is shoe reviews and retailers. So I'm gonna go on a little bit of a rant here, and a lot of people listening are probably not gonna like it, and you're more than welcome to turn this off or skip ahead. But I don't understand what the deal is with shoes and the interest in shoe reviews and the interest in the fascination around shoes. Like, there's probably an element of style and coolness and being in a club or whatever you want to call it to this that I don't really subscribe to. I think I'm subscribing to, let's try and see how fast we can run and how well we can run, not how cool we can look. So I think to some extent I'm missing that whole part of it, of which some people listening will probably be like, you know, find the design or the coolness in this. And I think, okay, that's all well and good, but I don't understand why people are so fascinated by shoe reviews. We recently parted ways with our retail partner because of a bunch of disagreements that we had with them, and they were being very strange towards us in multiple different ways. One of the leaders over there was being very arrogant towards me in a few different ways, sort of saying that I'm not allowed to call people out who I think are doping, and I fundamentally disagree with him. And one thing that one problem that we had with them was that when they sent shoes and I would speak about them in a way that they didn't like, they were really offended by it. And I'm like, but I'm giving you a review of the shoe. I can't just give you a fake review. I can't just share like something that is not true. And it led me to think there's only one way to take shoe reviews seriously, and it's to have a shoe review by someone that's not sent the shoes. They have to buy them themselves. And I know there's a lot of YouTubers that do that. But if you ever see anyone on a podcast or a YouTube give a review about shoes that they're paid for, I don't see any point in listening to that. They're probably told to do it by the brand, and okay, that's great. But what I don't understand about shoe reviews at all, and this is not in spite of the disconnection between our last retail partner and us. There was a bunch of other problems there, of which they continuously changed the contract on us. They promised certain funds, which they then turned around on and just basically decided not to pay us things that we did, which was very frustrating to deal with. That was the start of the problems. But the second thing was, like, the shoe reviews that they kept asking me to do, I was like, but what's the point of doing this? Like, there's no point in listening to someone that has a different body shape, a different foot, a different like for shoes, a different strike. They don't see, there's no point in them listening to me. There's really not. They have to try that on themselves. And that's kind of like why retail shoe shops, I think, should stay in business. And they should, let me rephrase. I think there's more value in a retail shoe shop than most people realize, simply because you can try shoes on. It's very simple. You can try shoes on and see what you like. I get asked every day, almost every day, I'd say 5 to 6 days a week, about shoes. And at this point, I don't respond to most messages anymore. I used to respond back and say, hey, look, I think it's best if you sort of try this for yourself, because I'm going to like something different to you. I love the Alpha Fly 3. Most people think it's not that good. I loved different shoes that other people think were terrible. And I just think, why aren't people making these decisions for themselves? And I'm just swimming upstream here. I know I'm swimming up a stream that's I'm going backwards in, but I don't understand why people will obsess over shoes and obsess over shoe reviews, but not get out the door and do the training properly to required to run the time they want. Instead of investing in actually training, in stretching, in understanding the training, in buying a book about training, in learning more about training, in getting a coach, people will buy all these shoes. I don't know. I just don't understand it. And I think that's why moving forward, right now, I've basically done all of my training, bar a few runs. I have used the Alpha Fly 3 in a couple of runs, but I've basically done every run in the Ultra Torin 5, which is like a 3-year-old model of the Ultras. And I'm training well. I'm training fine. I'm doing tempo runs. I'm doing speed workouts. I'm doing long runs. I'm doing easy runs. It works for everything. And I think these shoes were $60 in Dubai that I bought myself. And I just think, oh man, like, I don't know. I think you know what I'm getting at. I think I look at Instagram now and I just think there's so many people. And what I also don't understand, sorry, this is just a very aware of the rant and I'm swimming upstream and most people are probably turning this off thinking, dude, you're completely the minority here. Why would people also broadcast a brand on their own social media? I mean, yes, I've done it for sure. But like, are you being paid? I mean, I don't know, like free advertising for the brand. I mean, I see some people on Instagram that are posting about their On shoes or their Adidas shoes like every day for a week. I'm like, man, talk about being you paid full price for them too. Like, I don't know. Anyways, let's move on, shall we? Because I think that most people will probably turn this off at this point thinking I'm an idiot. So anyway, that's just my thoughts. Basically, let's summarize that. I hope that more people will invest in good education, invest in a good coach. You can use us if you want. I can also recommend many other good coaches if you want to find a coach locally in the UK or in Germany or in Australia or in New Zealand. I think a local coach is a good idea. If you remote coaches, you know, we obviously have a coaching academy. I think investing in a good coach or in your health, in better food, better diet, or in your sleep, there's lots of things that you can do for sleep. Some cost, some don't, before being obsessed with shoes. I think that's the best way to finish that. All right, moving on. So these In My Opinions are fun. They really are, because I have no idea what people are thinking when I'm talking out loud. I think half the audience is just like, you're a clown, and the other half is like, oh, he's actually saying some sense. So feel free to send me any thoughts. I always say this in the In My Opinions. Feel free to send me any thoughts to matt@sweatelite.co. It might be .com very soon. We might be getting that domain, but stay tuned on that. So the other thing I want to talk about is cultural differences in the media, because I feel like this is an interesting thing that a bunch of people have asked me about. So there's pretty significant differences, especially between Japan and the US. The Japanese runners tend to really avoid having any external, like, large identity, I feel like. I don't know if that makes sense. But when you speak to a Japanese runner, except for Kawuchi, because he's really taken his own path, most Japanese runners will give you a couple of words of an answer, and they'll be very, very shy to speak to the media. For them, it's all about the result. It's all about the running. And when I got to Japan and started doing this Ekiden series, some ASICS representatives reached out to me, and I actually had a meeting with them and talked to them about a bunch of things about this year, which we may or may not work with them on. Depends on some things. But they were like, how are you getting access to all these athletes, and how are you doing these videos? And to me, I'm like, you just ask. Like, you just get there and you ask, and then you do it. And they were like really surprised at the fact that how simple that was. And it made me realize that in Japan, people just don't do that. They don't feel like it's the right thing to do for whatever reason. And I don't think there was any sort of negative situations around that. There was probably a couple of times that I felt like some Japanese athletes or coaches were probably, lacking the better word, intimidated by the questions, or maybe thought they were a little bit forward. But I realized afterwards that I think that their understanding, and especially when they watch YouTube videos, I mean, it was very helpful. It was very convenient to work with coaches and athletes that had watched some Sweat Elite videos, because they knew what they were up for. But anyone that hadn't watched one before, they were a little bit surprised that I would, like, ask some questions in the middle of the workout. They'd be like, this is bizarre. Whereas in the US, for example, it's the complete opposite. I think US distance runners, it's a whole other spectrum in triathlon. In triathlon, it's really lifted to another level. But in running in the US, I feel like most of the runners now, especially the younger runners, like, let's talk more specifically, like Cooper Tier or Cole Hocker, who I just hung out with over the weekend. These guys are in Provo. It was the end of my content trip. These guys are really understanding that media and having a personality is a big part of the game. Speaking to media is a big part of the game. It's important for reasons that they understand deep down. And I think European athletes, I mean, I'm really generalizing here, like, really generalizing, of course, there's exceptions to the rule. And I think in Europe, it's a case where it's really individual. But across the board, Europe sits in the middle of Japan and the US. So what I mean by that is they sort of know that there needs to be some sort of forward-facing personality, but they're still, again, very aware I'm sort of bundling thousands of people into one bucket here, and there's exceptions to the rule. But they are definitely on the understanding that media is important and it grows the sport to a new level and people are inspired by it. But Europe's a big spectrum, and I feel like the UK especially is much more like the US. There's a lot more personality to it. Like, Andy Butchard is one of the best personalities, I think, out there. Does stay quiet from time to time. I wish he'd do a little bit more out there, but he has done a bunch of videos with us and people love them, and I really love shooting with him. Callum Elsom is another guy that really knows this stuff. Like, he obviously has done put together a series on himself. And there's a lot of other athletes out there that, especially in the UK, like Jake Whiteman did a YouTube series, you know, on his own channel, of which I wouldn't say I helped him start it, but at least he was sort of originally asking some questions about it when I did some podcasting with him, about a year and a half ago now. But he got that off the ground and got it rolling. And but I think once you get further and further towards, it's almost like the further west you are, the more you understand it. And the further east, like, Eastern European athletes tend to be a lot more quiet and shy and not wanting to speak. And then if you go further east, you go out to China and Japan, it's like extreme. But then if you go directly down south to Australia, I feel like Australian athletes are a lot more like the US. A lot more outgoing, a lot more forward. But I mean, you could probably say, thinking about this, like, while I'm speaking about this out loud, is that it's basically the same in general life as well. Japanese people tend to be very shy and quiet and sort of kept to themselves, whereas Americans tend to be a lot louder, a lot more forthcoming, a lot more forward. So it probably doesn't necessarily only apply to running. I think it's sort of a thing that is blended into the general way of life. So that's something that's been interesting to me. I probably didn't really explain that very well, but it's definitely a bit of a challenge when you're trying to produce content all around the world in trying to understand the cultural differences and the norms and not sort of pissing anyone off or being too forward with anyone. I feel like in the US it'd be impossible to be too forward with anyone, whereas in Japan it would be very easy for someone to be quite stunned or shocked about a question or a camera in their face when they're running a tempo run 2 meters away from them or 6 feet away from them, you know. So yeah, it's super interesting how it works, and it's been an honor, honestly, for me to be able to do this with athletes all around the world. There's definitely a lot more areas. Well, I wouldn't say a lot, but there's a few more areas that I think I'd like to explore. I think Kenya and Ethiopia, well, we've done plenty there, but I think other parts of Africa would be interesting to explore at some point. We haven't done a lot in South Africa. We haven't done a lot anywhere else. Morocco is another place, but I know that that's a bit of a question mark around, you know, some of the results going on there. And I know there's a bit of a history there with some cheating, but there's definitely some more cultures and countries that I'd like to spend more time in to try and produce content. New Zealand is one that I haven't really done any at. But yeah, there's plenty more interesting parts of the world that I would love to bring more content to you guys in the next few years. But for now, I'm in the US and I'll be here covering content in triathlon and running. Okay, what else? What else happened? I'll tell you what was interesting is a few months ago, I'm having fun with this, and if you don't feel like listening to this part, you're more than welcome to switch it off. That's what, one thing I don't understand about content is people will listen or they'll follow someone, but they'll just dislike them. I don't think that happens a lot to me, but I know some of my friends do this. They'll follow someone and hate them, and they'll just keep hating on them. And I'm like, you can unfollow. Like, it's really easy to unfollow, but no spite here. But I will say that this next part is probably something that some people will not enjoy. So many of you will know that a few years back, I partnered with a group in the UK, in London, called Worst Athletics. And there was a girl in the group, Anya Culling, who was very publicly humiliating, I guess. Oh, it's harsh. She had a massive go at me when I left and called out the leader of Worst Athletics for being quite scammy. Scammy in a way of, you know, offering coaches shares in the company when there was no income being reported on the other end. Stealing a lot of inquiries from other coaches and stuff like that. And on one of my, that's like 20% of it, honestly, just like monetizing coaches on training camps and all this stuff. And I think part of this sharing of this stuff is still, I'm still bitter about it. But at the same time, I think sharing this stuff hopefully will let people understand like where some of the problems, in my opinion, highlight, lie in the space of coaching and running, because there are a lot of other, there are definitely some other coaches out there that behave like this as well. They'll get into the coaching game and they'll say, how do I make as much money as I possibly can? Rather than, how do I provide the best service that I can? And that was absolutely what was going on at Worst Athletics. And so Anya was very, very backing of Nick and publicly called me out a few times saying I'm a fool and I'm embarrassing myself. And interestingly enough, one of the most recent in my opinions, I sort of shared how her commission level was very, very low compared to other coaches and this and that. And then like shortly after she left him and unfollowed, disconnected. I don't really know what's happened there. I've heard a few little whispers, but I do think it's interesting that for a long time there, I was very much the bad person and I was very much the liar. So I don't really know what's gone on there. But I think part of the reason why I share these stories is definitely that I still feel very frustrated about it, because I'm still owed a lot of money, of which I am fairly sure I worked out approximately the amount. And I'm sticking with that because I have transparently shared this before. Sweat Elite is a company that has large reach, but the revenue and the financials are still a challenge, because I think anyone that has tried to start a company in this space has, there's a graveyard full of people that have tried to start media companies. And I think I was lucky to some extent that I started one relatively early in 2016 when the internet was, you could argue the internet was pretty limited even still at that point compared to what it is now. I mean, Instagram was still pretty small. Websites were much more difficult to create. Podcasts were very rare at that point. So we were sort of a first mover in, to some extent, maybe not first, but yeah, I mean, Flowtrack had been around for a while. Let's Run had been around for a long time. So I will take that back. We were far from a first mover, but we're relatively early to the game of sort of a full-fledged media company. But part of the reason why I partnered with Worse Athletics was so that we could bring in more income to cover our costs. And so the agreement was that 20% of all inquiries that come into the leader went to us. And that didn't happen at all. And I learned over time from speaking to people at events that he was taking on inquiries that just weren't being recorded in that way. And I estimated it to be 100 plus. And I have said that before and I still stick to that. And so I think the reason why I share these stories is to, in a way, vent, but it's also in a way to warn people to look out for these things. I mean, coaching is something that I find fascinating because a lot of people think the value, I've shared this on In My Opinions before, a lot of people think the value in a coach is what's written on paper. And I fundamentally disagree with that. I think what's written on paper is about 30% of it. But the other 70% that I think that everyone should lean into when they get a coach, like properly lean into, is understanding the vision of the coach in a sense of making sure that you're not obsessing over numbers, making sure that your confidence is high. That's such a big deal, like confidence in running. I mean, it's a big deal in anything. But just following a plan blindly is such a small element of what I think that people should pay for in a coach. And I think that's where the frustration lied, because it lay, sorry. Because when I left, I was like, I'm part of a group that is not, that he's not coaching people. He's just copy and pasting plans, paying someone to do it, and broadcasting, yeah, anyway. So I think finally she's realized all that, left, gone to bigger and better things. But definitely interesting to observe. And I don't know if there's anything more there, but if you're listening to this and you have no idea what I'm talking about, I think the only thing you need to take from this is, if you do get a coach and you sign up to a coaching company, I think that you need to understand where the value truly lies and jump on phone calls. You know, figure out ways to be able to understand and really have confidence in your training. Lean into the nutrition side of it. Lean into the smaller things, the 1%ers that all add up. And your coach really should be telling you about these things. And if you don't even know where to start, then ask them. Say to them, what else is it there that I could be doing that will improve my running? Stretching is one that I'm doing a lot of now, which I never did before. In fact, I always thought it was a bit of a waste of time, but I realized probably about 6 months ago how wrong I was. I think it's quite important for reasons that I wouldn't be able to verbalize very well, but Nathan Daly at the Sweat Elite Coaching Academy has really run me through some interesting things here, and I'm feeling a lot better in training as a result of stretching for 15 minutes after every workout. So a prime example of just a small thing that I think can make a big difference, but your coach should be telling you about. And if he's not, or she, then you should just ask. So I think that these things are things that I'm really trying to make sure are shared. And once again, in case you hadn't noticed, these things are just my opinion. I'm not saying I'm right with anything that I'm saying. These are just stories and facts and information that I believe is true and I believe is important out there. So I hope that hopefully you're able to sort of, learn a few things from these. But I think that's all I have to say on this particular topic. Another topic I wanted to talk about in this episode, which I'll get to in a minute after I share some training sessions, is the Mocketeer thing. Because when I put up a story the other day and I offered for people to give some topics, I think I had about 40 responses, of which I've saved a good 35 of them for future episodes. One was someone questioning why I was supporting Mocketeer. So I'll get to that in a minute. But between now and then, I want to share three training sessions with you guys that I think are useful, which I've done on every single In My Opinion to date. There's one 5K, 10K workout. There's one half marathon specific workout. And there's one marathon specific workout. So the 5K, 10K workout that I really like is a very simple one. And it's one that Rick Rojas had me doing quite often when I was training under him a few years back. And for clarity, I really like Rick as a coach and I absolutely considered staying with him. The only reason why I didn't was because I was traveling and I wanted to be able to join other people socially. So I thought it's a bit easier to do my own schedule. But Rick had us doing this workout. So all credit goes to Rick. I caught up with Nell last week in Boulder, actually. It was really good fun to hang out with her again. But Rick does a 1 mile bookend, which is basically a threshold. He'll then do 12 400s where he'll progressively get faster throughout them. So for someone like me, I would start at around my 10K PB pace, 10K PR pace. So my 10K PR is 30 and a half. So that's about 74 for a 400. And we'll progressively get down to, well, I got down to around about 62, which is, what pace is that? Probably close to mile pace, maybe even a little bit quicker. I don't think I'd run 408 in a mile, no chance, not now. I have run 346 in a 1500, which is equated to a 403, but that was a while ago. I'd say it's probably between 8 and 1500 pace at the end. Recovery is 90 seconds, so 12 400s progressively getting quicker, around about a second each one, starting at a 10K pace, and then you finish off with another mile tempo at the end. So it's a mile, 12 400s progressively getting quicker, and then another mile. In between the mile and the 400s, you'll take 2 minutes rest. In between the 400s, you'll take 90 seconds rest. Actually, I don't think the recovery between the mile and the 1200s really mattered that much. It could be three. It could be 3 or 4 minutes. It doesn't really matter too much. That's a workout that I really enjoyed doing. I think it's a good one for anyone training between 5K, 10K. It's even effective for 8 and 1500, and you could argue it's even pretty effective for half marathon. But that is my workout of the week, focusing on 5 and 10K, or really any distance. And I think it can be done basically at any time of year as well. So all credit goes to Rick Rojas for that particular workout. Half marathon specific workout. So I have probably shared a similar one to this before, because I think at some point after you share 12 different specific workouts, it's almost like, okay, now you're just trying to be creative with it. And I mean, you can just repeat four of them and you'll be grand. But I really like the workout. I've only done this twice, I believe, where you'll start off with, obviously after a short warm up, you do a 5K effort at half marathon effort, so it's a little bit off the goal pace. I think that you should be starting that 5k run basically feeling like you're starting a half marathon, and getting to the 5k mark thinking, okay, well, I can continue for another 10 miles or another 16k. So you start with a 5k, then you'll take 3 minutes rest, then you do 10 by 1 minute on, 1 minute off. So the 1 minute ons are at about 5k effort, the 1 minute offs are just a jog. You'll then have a few minutes rest. It doesn't actually matter too much after the set. Maximum of 3 minutes, somewhere between 2 and 3. And then you'll do a 3K effort at half marathon effort again. So once again, you'll line up and just think, okay, well, this is my between 5K and 8K section of the race. You'll then stop. You'll take another 3 minutes rest and then get into 10 by 30 seconds on, 30 seconds off. 30 seconds on would be probably closer to mile pace. 30 seconds off can be a jog. So once again, that's 5K, 10 by 1 minute on, 1 minute off. 3K, 10 by 30 seconds on, 30 seconds off. That's a workout that I've done a few times that I really enjoy. And I think that that one should sit somewhere between 2 weeks out and 8 weeks out from a race. And probably in an ideal world, probably 3 or 4 or 5 weeks out from a half marathon specific race. And I think, once again, I think one thing we're really preaching at the Sweat Elite Coaching Academy at the moment is to not worry too much about specific times. You know, we'll dive into that more specifically in a different episode, although I have touched on it from time to time. I think the paces on these, on that 5K and 3K efforts, it doesn't have to be the goal pace. You should be lining up thinking, okay, I'm going to basically run this 5K as if it's the start of the race. It's really that simple. You don't need to have any metric to run off. You don't need to look at a pace. You don't need to look at a heart rate. You can if you want, and you can come up with those things if you like, but I think it's really important to get the half marathon specific effort really dialed in. So that is my half marathon workout of the week. My marathon workout of the week is, wow, I'm giving Rick Rojas actually a bit of a plug today. So thank you, Rick, for allowing me to share these ones. Although I didn't specifically ask him, but I know that he'll be fine with it, because he has no problem with sharing on Strava and on Instagram and on YouTube. So but thank you for Rick for coming up with these. This is actually a pretty simple one, of which I've done with Nell twice, and both times Nell actually stitched me up at the end, and I couldn't figure out how to stay with her, which is wild. Nell is someone that I think at some point soon will run a sub 220 marathon. I just don't know when. But it's 20 miles, 32K, broken up into 5-5-5-5. Where you'll end the final 5 miles at marathon effort, and you'll gradually get quicker throughout. So it's super simple. So you'll start at basically marathon effort plus 15%, marathon effort plus 10%, marathon effort plus 5%, marathon effort at the end. So the first 5 miles, or 8K, would be marathon effort plus 15%. And what that 15% means, it doesn't necessarily mean pace, doesn't necessarily mean heart rate, it just means that you're 15% off the effort.
It's really that simple. So this is a bit of a grinding workout and a relatively, I wouldn't call it boring, but it's just a gradual progression over 32K leading into the final 8K or 5 miles at marathon effort, which is pretty close to sort of the goal pace. But once again, I think it's really critical to not fixate on a specific pace, because what happens if it's really hot? What happens if it's really windy? What happens if you feel terrible? What happens if you slept poorly? What happens if you're stressed at work? These things all massively affect your performance. So I think being comfortable with that marathon effort being 15, 20 seconds per mile slower, or 10 to 15 seconds per K slower than the goal pace, is about where you want to be. And once again, I don't think it's important to be super specific, but let's say, for example, me, this year I want to try and hold 3:15 per K or 5:10 per mile pace. I think in the last 5 miles of that run for me, I'd probably want to be around about 3:25 per K or 5:30 a mile. And I think in that workout, it's also critical. And this is another thing, looping back to the importance of a coach, it's really important, I think, to practice the fueling in that workout as well. So taking in gels, taking in drink mix, throughout that run to really make sure that your stomach is going to be able to tolerate the fueling while you're running at that effort. I think that's a really important thing from a coaching standpoint too. All right, I've got so many more things on this list that I'd love to talk about, but I'm just going to finish off with the Mokotia thing. So when Mokotia had his suspension a few weeks ago, maybe over a month ago now, I publicly said a few times that I don't think we should write him off straight away. I think that it's important to look at all the facts, understand that he may have missed 3 tests because of his location and this and that. And Mokotia has been someone that I think a lot of people have looked at negatively for a very long time just due to his progression. And I get that. But I have shared on other podcasts before that, and interestingly enough, Kyle Merber from The Lap Count, he said this on a, I really appreciated a part that he said, but there's Americans that have had the same leaps like Jared Neguse, which we don't question because we're familiar with them and we like them. We don't like Mokotia because of who knows what reason, or many people haven't liked him, and his progression has looked very similar to someone like Jared Neguse. If you look at the facts, it is true. Jared Neguse did drop from 350 something mile to 343 in a year. I think it was 352. Like, that's massive. And I mean, that's really not that much different from Katia going from 336 to 328 in the 1500 in the same year. But where I was fundamentally wrong was, I mean, Katia's excuses and the reasoning for his whereabouts looked very bad. It looked very much like he was lying. It was a sad case of, on my end, sad case. It was just a case of me getting to know him a little bit through filming him twice and him just generally being a very kind and softly spoken and polite person. And people are probably sitting there shaking their heads going, yeah, but that doesn't mean he's not doping. And I know that. But it's interesting how the human psychology works. When you get to know someone, you're just going to support them no matter what happens. And if I'd never met him and he'd never agreed to filming, my stance would have been different. And there's no conclusion to what I'm saying here. It's just, it is what it is. But I just wanted to say that if anyone saw those posts and they saw my support, you know, I'm very aware that I was wrong. And I think in retrospect, it's just really a case whereby of familiarity. It's just, I like the guy. I mean, I did when I got to know him. I wouldn't even say I'm good friends with him. I filmed him twice in 2 workouts, both in Spain, one near his hometown, the one in Sierra Nevada. And they were both awesome videos. And yes, he did contribute massively to Sweat Elite content. And yes, there are loads of people commenting on the videos right now saying, cheater, doper, why are you filming him? Look, no evidence has come out yet that he was doping, but his excuses don't look good. I'm aware of that. But I thought I would just share and reflect on that situation as well while I'm here. So, well, I beat the hour mark today. So my friend from the Athletics Integrity Unit, who is hopefully coming to my wedding this year, he just had his second child, so he might not be able to, we'll see. He'll be stoked that I'm getting this under an hour, so let's try and wrap this up now. But really appreciate you tuning in. Hopefully a few things were learned. Hopefully you were able to endure my ranting. And we'll drop another one of these very soon. We didn't produce a training talk episode last week because I was on the road on a hectic content trip, which we'll talk about soon. I filmed Jason West, Gwen Jorgensen, Sam Parsons, who else? Zohair Talbi, Elia Kibet, Cooper Tier and Cole Hocker, Oh, it was huge. It was such a good week. Sam Appleton. So all those videos are going to come out in the next few weeks. I hope that you enjoy them. There's so much more coming to Sweat Elite in the near future. I'm really excited to share with you guys. And hopefully you'll join our shareholders club. You can go check that out by looking at the Sweat Elite website. I'll speak to you all next time.